Well, tell us, Ivor, what have Ice House been up to in the last year or so? We'll bring us up to the end of 1984, and then let's talk about what your plans are for the new year for 1985.
Right. So the last time you probably saw me in Britain was with Bowie's Serious Moonlight Tour, which is August 83. I came back and started working with the Fairlight primarily to do a soundtrack for Russell Mulcahy's first movie, Razorback. So I did that. That took me quite a while. It took me probably 4 weeks to learn how to use the machine, and then I went into the studio. That took care of me up over Christmas. I started writing the new album, which is Sidewalk, and we recorded that in February. And we've virtually been touring since May, I think, and we started an Australian tour in May. That took us to New Zealand as well. We ended up in Europe for most of the summer there. And we didn't make it to Britain this time. We had a really tight schedule because I'd committed to do a really peculiar thing in Japan with Yukihiro Takahashi from the Yellow Magic Orchestra. And he invited me to be a guest on his tour as part of his band. He does that every year. So I was playing with Steve Jansen from Japan, a couple of Japanese musicians, and that was great fun. And then we came back to, all met up again in Australia a couple of months ago, and we've been touring here ever since. And by the time we finish, we will be it'll be Christmas Eve, I think. We're doing 3-4 days in Japan, and that'll be the end of the year's tour.
Well, including the Bowie concerts, and being invited by Bowie, I believe it was his specific request that you supported him on some of the Serious Moonlight Tour, the European part of it, wasn't
That's
it?
Right, yeah.
Including working with Russell and doing an album. You've had a busy 18 months in all, haven't you?
Yeah, it's been bordering on ridiculous. We did a lot of touring this year because this particular band has never gotten kind of road legs, as it were. We've been a bit sort of erratic in our touring behaviour. And that's why this year we've done such a large block of touring, and it's really settled down really well. I mean, hopefully tonight you'll see some results.
When Ice House began, I remember the lineup of the group, and it seemed to change quite a bit in the early days. I think it took a year or two. I think certainly the first two albums before you settled down to a regular lineup, as it were. More recently, you've had the same musicians playing in the band. Indeed, they are regular members of Ice House, I suppose. Can you talk a bit about who they are and what instruments they play?
Kind of a misnomer in a way to call it an Australian band because there are four Englishmen in it at the moment. We've had an additional member added this year, a saxophonist who is Simon Lloyd, and you probably have heard of him playing on lots of records, but most notably he was a member of The Members. So he's a new addition for the year, and also Gary Hughes, the second keyboard player, who came from being musical director with Imagination. But the long-time members are Andy Kunter, keyboard player, who I first saw with Hazel O'Connor when we came over for our first British tour, and he's played with a few other people as well. Guy Pratt is the bass player. He also has been with a lot of bands. He's played with lots of people, including Killing Joke and people like that for odd stints, Sylvain and lots of people. The other two Australians, apart from myself, are Bob Kretschmer, who's the lead guitarist, who I've idolised for a long time before I had enough courage to grab him, and John Lloyd, who is the longest-standing member of the band, who's been with us since, I don't know, the year dot, a long time. So he comes from Sydney, so there's seven of us all together. It's getting more every minute.
Put us into perspective, if you will, because we're actually talking about some part of Ice House. I mean, it began its days in Australia, and we are in South Australia talking at the moment. So put it into perspective as to where Ice House stand as a group in the Australian music scene at the moment.
I think we're in a kind of peculiar situation. I don't see anybody else as being in this situation in this country because this is a fairly high turnover sort of market. Nothing like somewhere like Japan, where apparently you know bands are up and down and their entire careers are over within minutes. But it's fairly fast here, and it's difficult to establish a place where you can gain some kind of respect and still last a long time. And I think that seems to be the position we're in. We've been right at the beginning, kind of set our own rules, which included taking our own time to do things, and of course this has been a limitation to a certain extent in commercial terms. It's been a long time in between albums and things like that. There have been large periods where we haven't toured at all. But in the long run, I think it seems to have kind of worked in a peculiar way. So we're in that kind of situation where we seem to be well-liked and well-respected without being flavour of the month.
Is the Australian music scene a climate where you don't necessarily have to have a top 10 single hit or an album hit? You can still survive by playing clubs, theatres, university dates, as Icehouse have been?
You could survive that way, but obviously, you know, all those kind of hits and things help. But I think it's one of the few remaining places in the world where there is a very active live circuit, and if you're willing to exist on a, you know, not a ridiculously extravagant level, you can play. And there are lots of bands that seem to just do nothing else but constantly tour here and survive very well at it.
I remember reading the credits on the first album, and it was all Ivor Davis. There wasn't anyone else. So now, how much more do you depend on the rest of the musicians in terms of, say, songwriting, the music, or the lyrics?
There are still certain areas which, because of what I consider to be my own inadequacies, I find hard to include other people in. It's very difficult, for example, for me to imagine sitting down and writing lyrics with somebody else. Mind you, that seems to be the situation. And generally, when you find a song credited to a number of people, you find that they individually take care of certain areas of the song. One person will write lyrics, one person will write the vocal line, one person will write the drums or the backing track or whatever. And that's still pretty much the same as it ever was with me. But it's nice to have people around who give you ideas, and that's something new. You know, that's great. I mean, they're all from such incredibly diverse musical backgrounds too. There are a couple of, you know, people who are really well entrenched in funk music, and there's Bob is definitely what you'd call an avant-garde guitarist.
And I would imagine that because you've got some English musicians, and I know that you've certainly been influenced by the English pop scene yourself in the past, that by having musicians in the band who are from that part of the world, it helps you even more to gain an idea about European music, where a lot of the influences come from anyway.
It doesn't, to some extent, and to other extents, it's been a real shock, because it constantly surprises me how much intuition the musicians in this country have about music, especially what's very current. And sometimes I look at the English guys and sort of think, hang on, you know, we've already sort of done that, you know. Then, of course, on the other hand, always when they come across, they've got something new. You know, they say, oh, well, this is really sort of happening now, and I'm very curious about what's going on.
Back to talking about the music scene in Australia for a moment. Now, I guess it comes in peaks and pitfalls in some ways, the music business does. Countries produce excellent bands, and then for a time they disappear. Looking back into history, I suppose 82, 83 was the year for Australian groups with yourself, Icehouse, and Men at Work. And you really put this country on the map and said to the rest of the world, including America and Britain, the two most important music markets at the time, Australia has produced and will produce as much. Now, that seems to wane a little bit lately. Men at Work are certainly not around. Icehouse, as you have said, have been heavily touring, so they've not been in Europe as much.
That, I think, was almost inevitable, and I was very wary of the whole fashion of Australian popularity, especially as it was applied to America, because it seemed to me that it was built on a lot of fad marketing, and it worried me right from the beginning. It's unfortunate that those kind of mechanisms are built into that kind of popularity. But hopefully at least it's impressed the point that it exists there, and there is still a certain amount of, if not on any other level, underground interest in Australian music which didn't exist before, and that to me is bonus enough.
Perhaps in Britain the fads and fashions in music are even stronger than anywhere else, the image that a band makes and the kind of music that they record. And in the case of Icehouse, there have been criticisms levelled at them that they sound a little bit too like Roxy Music or a little bit too much like David Bowie. How much are you concerned about those kind of criticisms, and do you actually objectively try to make it sound as unique as you can, or do you not worry at all?
I'm still pretty much at the mercy of my own shortcomings, and I've, in almost in all situations in music, whether it be writing songs or in the studio or playing live, I'm constantly following my nose. A lot of people held up as being very calculated, and I have a great deal of respect for them and probably a certain amount of envy as well. But I'm still pretty much, learning, and that's how I consider myself to be a student of music, and that's the way I think. So I do everything with reasonably honest intention, and whatever the way it comes out, that's it.
Perhaps a continuing student, but also you did graduate at one point in your career as a classical student, I think in Sydney or somewhere like that.
Yeah, that's right, actually. I spent a lot of time in classical music, but I haven't been involved in that for probably 7 or 8 years. Well, I've spent a good 10 years, I guess, learning and studying seriously classical music.
The soundtrack that you did was your first departure from doing ordinary vinyl, wasn't it, Razorback? Is it something that you would like to do again, and if so, have you got plans in the future?
It is something I'd like to do again. I haven't got any specific plans because the year coming up is looking more complicated by the second. There are a lot of things I'd like to do, not only within the area of film, but in other areas outside the area of rock and roll. And it's a matter of fitting them all in. I really enjoyed writing film music because you can kind of indulge yourself to a degree. The expectations are not so stringent. The formats are not so prohibitive, and that was one reason. I was kind of like purging myself of a whole bunch of music that I had stored up for a long time.
I know that when you played in support, when Isas did the Serious Moonlight tour with Bowie, that you came very close to someone who is an admitted idol of your own, someone perhaps that you've been influenced by and you followed in their career earlier. Is there anyone else that you would like to collaborate with that is an established artist or unknown at the moment?
There are lots of people for whom I have respect, but I'm a bit afraid of my own capacity to collaborate. And I'm also aware that generally people don't get to be as good at what they do without being fairly headstrong and fairly having fairly severe sort of convictions. And I'm wary of involving myself with people like that, and unless I know them very well, and obviously it's difficult to know what you're going to be up against. So it's something that I'm curious about, but something I'm still a bit nervous about.
Having toured extensively in Japan, New Zealand, and in your own home country here in Australia with the last album, this year you've tended to leave Europe and Britain aside, and America also. I think those are territories in the world that do need that constant attention, where not only do you release an album and do a little promotional visit, interviews, whatever, but you need to do some gigs, don't you?
Yeah. I would have loved to have done some playing in London, especially this time, because the band has reached such, or this year, reached such a peak because it was playing so much. It was unfortunate that the timing of our schedule was such that I had to get to Japan in order to do this other thing, which I was really curious about. I mean, I've never been a member of anybody else's band before, and I must say it could become addictive. It was great fun doing it, but it was unfortunate because it was literally a matter of doing the last show in Paris and getting on the plane and flying straight to Tokyo, which was pretty tight.
Who else in Australia do you rate at the moment? Who do you think we should keep an eye out for in 85 as an up-and-coming band that you think is going to make their mark musically in the world?
I think there are a few people that I think will definitely make a mark, and I think NXS are probably destined to do that. And Midnight Oil, obviously a band of enormous stature here. One band that I've been a fan of for a while, and I'm very pleased to say they've just started to have some chart success here, are Machinations, who I think is a fantastic band. And in fact, about 3 years ago, I was in a club in Scotland, in Glasgow, I think, and they had an independent single out in this country. It was their very first single, and it was really obscure. And I walked into this club, and the first thing I heard was this single. I couldn't believe my ears. And at that point, I thought, right, yeah, they're going to do it. And I hope they do. They're really good.
It's a small world, isn't it?
Yeah, it is indeed.
Well, you're certainly not old, but you are one of the elder statesmen of rock and roll, in a sense, because you've achieved some success. And I suppose our music industry works that if you're successful, then you are there to mark time for other people, in a way.
I hope, yeah. I mean, when you talk about people like Machinations and things like that, it's very strange, and it's great to sit back and watch what's going on. And I've known them kind of from afar for a long time, and it was really frustrating to see the kind of traps and whatever that they were going through. And it's great to see finally a single being played on the radio, and you think, that's great. And really hear the way they changed as well, because they've become so good.
Back to Icehouse, because that's important to you, obviously. What sorts of songs, what musical direction does the band take live these days? Because you've got lots of recorded material to draw from now, haven't you?
Yeah, it's a real luxury, actually, to have so much stuff. We've changed it around a bit this year. Obviously, there's a large content of the show, which is based on the new album. And it was interesting playing that in places where, at that point, the album hadn't even been released, because that's the way you get to judge whether the songs are good or not. People had never heard them before, and so it was great playing, you know, tracks from Sidewalk in Germany, for example. So it's a kind of a smattering of a large content of the new album, and some of the very first songs that we ever wrote, and a couple of more obscure ones as well. We threw in a B-side as well, just to kind of put people off the course a bit. So there's probably a couple of songs that you've never heard before.
How about touring? Do you find it an enjoyable experience still, or do you feel a little discomfort? You feel that you'd like to be doing something else instead?
I think it's like anything else. If you do too much of it, it becomes a drag. I had a really good time this year because we haven't, as I said, toured very much in the year previous to that. But as I say, if we were to continue to do this sort of thing, I mean, I think I like spending time in the studio, but after a while, the studio becomes a really oppressive place. I like playing live, but then that can be really disorientating as well if you're all the time away. So, you know, all things in moderation.
Christmas is just around the corner, and with it 1985. From what you're saying, you've got a very busy and productive year, and exciting in many ways.
Yeah, well, hopefully it'll include possibly a little bit of my first attempts at production, and possibly some things, perhaps a soundtrack, something away from the rock and roll arena, and I want to spend a lot of time on the new album, and I'm not sure exactly how it's going to turn out, because I want to try a few different things. So I can't really tell you what that's going to be, but you'll just have to wait.
The year is certainly going to be full of some surprises anyway.
I think so, yeah.